Sanatan Goswami. Hare Krishna. Is anyone else online with us? Or?
But Biju online.
Oh, very good.
Find out if he's going to join him.
Okay, very good. So, we'll start with the preface. Any questions or comments so far before we begin? Okay. Right. So, Rohit Prabhu, would you like to begin a reading on this, please, Prabhuji?
Preface. The Nectar of Devotion is a summary story of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu.
Rasamrita
Sindhu, which was written in Sanskrit by Srila Rupa Goswami Prabhupada. He was the chief of the six Goswamis who were the direct disciples of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. When he first met Lord Chaitanya, Srila Rupa Goswami Prabhupada was engaged in the minister in the Maham Mahadin government of Bengal.
Can I just stop for a moment? We're just beginning on the preface here, Mukesh Prabhu.
What's page 2
Okay. So we're about 6 lines down.
Start from the beginning, Prabhu.
Okay.
All right. Fine, we'll start from the beginning, Prabhu.
Okay. It's very relishable, so no problem. But when you see this word Rasamrita, when you've got a line over a vowel, it means it's a long vowel. So instead of rasa, it's rasamrita. And the R with a dot underneath it is a ri. So rasamrita. Is that okay? Okay. And gradually you'll pick up all these things and they'll just flow off the tip of your tongue. Okay.
Preface. The Nectar of Devotion is a summary story of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, which was written in Sanskrit by Srila Rupa Goswami Prabhupada. He was the chief of the six Goswamis who were the direct disciples of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. When he first met Lord Chaitanya, Srila Rupa Goswami Prabhupada was engaged as a minister in the Mohammedan government of Bengal. He and his brother Sanatana were then named Dabira Kasa and Shakara Malika respectively, and they held responsible posts as ministers of Nawab Hussain Shah. At that time, 500 years ago, the Hindu society was very rigid, and if a member of the Brahmana caste accepted the service of a Muhammad Dhanruya, he was at once rejected from the Brahmana society. That was the position of the two brothers, Dabira Kalsa and Shakara Malika. They belonged to the highly situated Saraswata Brahmana community, but they were ostracized due to their acceptance of ministerial posts in the government of Hussain Shah. It is the grace of Lord Chaitanya that he accepted these two exalted personalities as his disciples and raised them to the positions of Goswamis, the highest position of Brahminical culture. Similarly, Lord Chaitanya accepted Haridasa Thakura as his disciple. Although Haridasa happened to be born of a Mahamadan family, and Lord Chaitanya later on made him the acharya of chanting the holy name of the Lord. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Krishna Krishna. Hare Hare. Hare Rama. Hare Rama. Rama Rama. Hare Hare. So, this is something which is, perhaps it would be helpful to explain a few points here. That Dabira Kas and Shakara Malik, these Rupa and Sanatan Goswamis, formerly they had Hindu names. They were actually in very high class Brahmin family. But the principle is that if a Brahmin accepts the service of someone else, then he is considered Shudra. Because the Brahmin, he's not meant to serve anyone else. He's not meant to be anyone's service. He's a servant. He's meant to be independent. Similarly, the Kshatriyas and the Vaishyas also, they're not meant to be servants of anyone else. And so particularly accepting the service of a low-class man, then they were ostracized. They were kept out. Just like Prabhupada, he quoted a saying, something about hookers and pani, that if someone's ostracized, then we won't smoke with them. So, you know the expression? But the idea is that nowadays, of course, many people, they smoke their hookers, but if someone is ostracized, then they, you know, you don't smoke with them. So the Brahmins, they rejected Dabi Rakas and Sakara Malik because they'd become servants of the Mohammedan ruler. But then we could inquire, well, why were these two great personalities? And indeed, they were very, very great personalities. They were very exalted, learned persons. They knew so many languages. They were very well versed in the Shastras. They were very elevated members of society. So why would they accept the service of a Mohammedan ruler? And the reason is that they were forced to. In actual fact, because the Nawab Hussein Shah, his business was conquering and subduing so many groups and expanding his empire here and there and wherever he could. And he knew that he would need the support of the most intelligent people of the Hindu community. And therefore he selected Rupa and Sanatan as the most exalted persons. And he forced them by threatening that if you do not join me in my service, then I will commit so many atrocities against the Brahmin society. I will turn them all into Muslims and I will create so much havoc in the Hindu society. So practically, as a sacrifice, these two brothers, they accepted the service of the Nawab Hussein Shah, very powerful ruler, Muslim ruler. And in this way, they rendered very high-class service. They gave him all sorts of assistance because they actually had no choice but to do that. But, surprise, surprise, they hated it, actually. And they did not want to be engaged in this. But they were so much pleasing to the Nawab that he gave them so much wealth, he gave them so much power, so much prestige, so much land, so much opulence, so much facilities. They became fabulously wealthy. And he even bestowed upon them the honor of, at least in his view, the honor of having these Muslim names, Dabir Khas and Shakara Malik. And in this way, they became known by these names. And simply by accepting the service of the Mohammedan ruler, then the Brahmin community, this very high caste Saraswata Brahmin community, they wouldn't have anything more to do with them. They're outcast, useless. Because one of the principles that is mentioned, sorry, thanks for it. Rasika always does that, I'm afraid. She always leaves the door open. Born in a barn. Anyway, sorry. The principle is that by accepting the service, one becomes low class. One becomes Shudra. So we can see what is the position of everyone in this age. Everyone is brought up to be a Shudra. Actually, everyone is born to be a servant of this person and in the employ of such and such a person or group or whatever. And in this way, accepting the occupation of Shudra. And because there is no sangskar and people are totally ignorant of the goal of life, therefore the Shastric injunction is that Kalo Shudra Shambhava, that in the age of Kali, everyone is born lower than Shudra. actually lower than Shudra. Because Shudra, they're meant to serve the other higher members of society and become purified by that service. But even the society itself is not even a society of human beings, and therefore lower than Shudra, simply servant of animals. So therefore the statement is there, Kalo Shudra Sambhava. So, and we see that Dabhyakas and Shakara Malik, they later became Goswamis. Lord Chaitanya elevated them to the highest platform of spiritual life of being Goswamis, actually. Because this is completely confirmed by Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, what is the quality of a human being? In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains that one's position in the four varnas. Could you keep the door closed, please, Rasika? Sorry, because they talk out there and then we can't hear. What happens in the four varnas, there is Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya and Sudra. So these varnas are established by Krishna's explanation himself in Bhagavad Gita. Chaturvarnyam Mayashrishtam. These four varnas are created by me. How they are created and why? He explains guna karma vibhagasha. They're according to their quality, their guna and their karma. The living beings, according to their quality and their work, they're known by the different orders, either Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, or Shudra. Krishna never says janma. He never says because you were born in a Brahmin family that you are Brahmin. He never says because you were born in a Shudra family that you are destined to remain a Shudra for the rest of your life. But rather, he took Dabhyakas and Shakara Malik, who had been outcasts of the human society, effectively. And Lord Chaitanya elevated them to the platform of Goswami. Why? Because their qualities and their work are that of Paramahamsas, servants, topmost servants of Krishna. Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, Yogi nam api sarvesham maggatenantaratmana shraddhavan bhajate yo mam same yuktatamo mataha. He says, and of all yogis, one who always abides me with great and transcendental faith, always worshipping me in loving service, that person is the topmost of all yogis and is uttama, the highest of all, the first class. So these are Krishna's statements about the qualities of a human being. So we can see and we will see how the example of these six Goswamis, they're actually the most elevated persons in society because they surrendered completely to Lord Chaitanya, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and always absorbed in the mood with great faith of loving service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, they are Goswamis. And we see also the position of Haridas Thakur. Here it's mentioned that similarly, Lord Chaitanya accepted Haridas Thakur as his disciple. Although Haridas happened to be born in a Mohammedan family, and Lord Chaitanya later on made him the acharya of chanting the holy name of the Lord. So this principle is very significant because even one may be born in the lowest of all degraded families of meat eaters or whatever. But the fact is that, in fact, Lord Chaitanya himself, he is the acharya of chanting the holy name, but he transferred this honor to Haridas Thakur, actually. That Haridas, you are actually the acharya, you're always completely absorbed in chanting the holy name. He was daily chanting 192 rounds every day. And he was expert preacher, expert in practicing the principles of Krishna consciousness and preaching the principles of Krishna consciousness. Therefore, he's acharya, actually. And although he happened to become to come from a Mohammedan family, factually, in that way, Lord Chaitanya accepted him because of his qualities and his work as the most exalted personality, as the Namacharya, the acharya of chanting the holy name, the teacher by example, by his own example. Not just that he gives nice examples in class, but he lives the right example of being fully absorbed in chanting the holy name. So these are to be understood. Any questions or comments so far?
We discussed today about shudras. What's the difference between shudras and chandala?
Shudra means he's within the human society. His role is to, just like the legs of the body, is to serve the rest of the body. The legs don't have much other function except to serve the rest of the body. So similarly, the shudra's business is to serve the rest of the body in society. The head is to give direction, yes? Without it, big problems. The arms and the chest, they are for protecting the body and carrying out the orders of the head, yes? And the belly is meant for feeding all the body, and the legs are meant for supporting the rest of the body. So the Shudra's role is to serve the three other high castes, the Vaishyas, the Kshatriyas, and the Brahmins. The Brahmins, their position is in the mode of goodness. The Kshatriyas, their situation is they're in the mode of passion. And the Vaishyas, their position is in the mode of passion and ignorance. And the Shudras, their position is they're in the mode of ignorance. And the Chandalas, what is their position is they're outcast. They're fully in Nessias. Chandala means dog eater. They don't even qualify as Shudras.
Similar to the Japanese?
Yes, yes. There are so many Kirata, Hunindra, Pulkasha, so many different groups are mentioned in Bhagavatam of lowest class human beings. Not considered actually even on the platform of human beings, practically speaking, but outcast from the human society. Because the human society, they should be within the Varnashram system. Hare Krishna, Bhupendra Guru. So, in this way, there are different divisions, but we see where are there chandalas, just like in Korea, and the Philippines also, you find there are many people, they specialize in eating dogs. They are considered very low-class human beings. But still, they're very receptive, a lot of them, to Krishna consciousness. So it is not, if someone is actually interested in Krishna, then it's not a disqualification. Just like Prabhupada explained that these Western devotees who he sent to the West, by their preaching, they're actually acting with the qualities and the activities of Goswamis. They may be householders, but actually they're on the platform of directly serving Lord Chaitanya by spreading this Krishna consciousness movement. So therefore, actually on the level of sannyasis. Although externally engaged in mundane activities of household life, but actually factually engaged in utilizing their valuable human lives for spreading Krishna consciousness. They were struggling for a year. They weren't having any income. They were struggling for a year when they came to the UK just to try to establish and get Krishna consciousness with a foothold in here in the UK. Doing Harinam Sankirtan every day up and down Oxford Street, hoping that people would take notice. And sometimes people were coming. And they particularly wanted to capture the attention of the Beatles, because they were thinking that if the Beatles take this up, then it will become very solidly established. Because as Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, yad yad acharati shrestas, whatever example a great man sets by the estimation of the world, then the other people follow. So the Beatles, they were considered great men. So they struggled for a year to actually get Krishna consciousness established, and their business was simply how to serve Srila Prabhupada. This is the reason they came to the West, these three household couples and Shamsunda's daughter, Saraswati. So they came and they very nicely established this Krishna consciousness movement in the UK. Is okay? Now Mukesh Prabhu, you had a question.
Yeah, I just want to ask, can you explain the difference between Smarta Brahmin and what Krishna is saying for Brahmin?
Ah, Yes, the smarter Brahmins, they are very much attached to the regulative principles given in the Vedas, but actually they're not very interested in the conclusion of what Krishna is saying in Bhagavad Gita. They are the ritualistic Brahmins, just like we find the example of the smarta Brahmins in the Krishna book, where Krishna and Balaram are there, and the boys, they come up to them one day and say, "My dear Krishna and Balaram, you're very expert in killing demons, but we have a big problem. We're very hungry. So can you please kill this demon of hunger for us?" So Krishna says, "Yes, all right. You go, you will see that just now, this was the forerunner pastime to the Govardhan Leela, actually. Because these ritualistic Brahmins, they were busy making a nice big sacrifice, because their interest was to do the sacrifices so they can be elevated to the heavenly planets. They're not interested in Krishna. So Krishna said, at this time, their wives have, you know, there's a lot of food there. You can ask the Brahmins to please deliver some food. But don't ask in my name, because I'm only a Vaishya. Better ask in Balaram's name, because at least he's of a higher caste. He's a Kshatriya. He's the son of Vasudeva. And in this way, you can explain to them that they can give some food at this time. But be warned, they're not devotees. They can't even utter the my names. Anyway, see how you get on. And so the boys went, and they explained to the Brahmins, as they were actually entitled to do, because they're actually their topmost Vaishnavas. Actually, even they were begging in the name of Krishna and Balaram, that now you please deliver us some foodstuff. This is a proper time in the performance of your sacrifice. It will not be a bad time for you to distribute food. It won't be a problem. So please give us in charity. But they just ignored the boys. They weren't interested. They just...
they didn't listen to them. Yeah. They're not listening, you know.
Yeah. Couldn't care less. So the boys became very unhappy, and they returned back to Krishna and Balaram and said, "Look, we're really hungry," and they really disappointed because they just ignored us. So Krishna said, "All right, Betty, you go to their wives, because their wives are actually my devotees, and you ask them." And so they went, and immediately the wives said, "Krishna and Balaram, you all are hungry? Okay, immediately." And they brought everything. They left home, they ignored the instructions of their husbands, of their fathers, of their sons, and they walked out. They said, "No, we're going." And they took nice, lots and lots of food, and they brought it to Krishna and Balaram, and then they said, they came to the forest, and they said, "My dear Krishna, we've come to surrender to your lotus feet. Now please instruct us. Please give us shelter at your lotus feet." So they were devotees. They could understand that the real business is to serve Krishna. But these ritualistic Brahmins, they could not serve Krishna. But they were very unhappy that their wives had left. But Krishna, what did he tell the wives? He told them that actually this is very nice. Now, my instruction is you should all go home. This is what he told all the wives of the Brahmins. And they said, "But we've come here to surrender to you. So how can you tell us to go home? And besides that, we've given up our families, we've given up our homes, and they won't even accept us back anymore." And Krishna said, no. Actually, they'll be very happy to have you back. Because actually your householders, your husbands are householders, they require the help of their wives to execute the sacrifices. Sacrifices should be done by husband and wife together. So they're Brahmins, they need your help. And they'll be very happy to have you back, so don't worry. So Krishna sent them back. They didn't want to go, but Krishna said, "You go back." He said, "All right, Hare Krishna, we will go, you follow your order." And in this way, their husbands were very, very pleased to have them back. They were so pleased, and they actually condemned themselves. They condemned themselves because in spite of all their sacrifices, in spite of all their rituals, their smarta following all the ritualistic principles, they hadn't developed any love for Krishna and Balaram. And so they actually said, I think you know what they said. They said, "To hell with all our following the regulative principles. To hell with all our study of the Vedas. To hell with all our useless human form of life. To hell with it all. Because we haven't developed a love for Krishna and Balaram. Even though they're there, they offered us, they gave us a trick to engage us in their service, and we said, no, we're not interested. So they condemned themselves. And this is actually the position that the smarter Brahmins are very much condemned, because they're only interested in following the ritualistic principles followed in the Vedas, but they never come to the conclusion of the Vedas, where Krishna explains, Vedaischa sarve, aham eva vedyo, that by all the Vedas, what's the point of studying all the Vedas? Krishna says, I am what is to be known. If you study all the Vedas and you don't know Krishna, then what is the use of your study? So this point is the difference between the smarter Brahmins and the Vaishnavas. A Brahmin is supposed to be someone who knows what is Brahman. He's engaged in the study of Brahman. This is a Brahmana, a Brahmin. But if they don't come to the platform of Vaishnavas, then actually, I forget the exact statement, how it goes in Sanskrit, but basically the Brahmani is considered shuchi, pure. So the statement is that if a Brahmin is not a devotee of Krishna, then he's a muchi, he's impure. And if a muchi, an impure person, is a Vaishnava, then actually he is suchi, he is pure. So just by name, it doesn't make one suchi or muchi. But what makes one suchi or muchi is whether or not that person is a Vaishnava. And we see here this statement that...
Muchi means shoemaker?
Yeah, muchis, shoemakers. Yeah, they deal with the... dead bodies. Yeah, they're interested in the skins of dead animals, because they would take the skins of dead animals and make shoes or whatever, handbags and so many things in this way. But they would wait. The tradition was that the muchis, when the animal is dead, they would come and take it away, and they would take the skin and make it into useful things, and they would eat the meat. So this is the muchi, low class. But in that way they would be given the carcass of the animal. This is their activity. Yes? So, but if that person becomes a Vaishnava, then actually that person becomes shuchi. It doesn't mean they carry on eating meat. But actually that person, he may be coming from a muchi family, just like Haridas Thakur, he was coming from the family of meat eaters. But he became elevated to the topmost status of the living example of one who is fixed up 100% in the chanting of the holy name, the example for everyone else to follow, the Acharya. Like that. Does that answer your question, Mukesh Prabhu? Hare Krishna. Any other question or comment? Is that okay, Rohit? Okay.
How does it work now if somebody's almost like a shoemaker and if they're a devotee?
Yes, so your task may be to make shoes, but if you're making shoes, if that is your position, if you're a humble cobbler, but you're a Vaishnava, then you don't have to eat the meat just because you're a cobbler. You wanted to say, Prabhu?
Tell the story about the cobbler and Brahman, you know?
Yeah.
Good story you told us.
Yeah, this is a very nice story. Maybe you'd like to say the story.
No, you can say, Prabhu.
Anyone know the story? Bhupendraji? You want to say it? You want to say the story?
Brahmin and a cobbler, isn't it?
Yeah. We've done this. Actually, this is a very nice play that we do sometimes.
You play about it in Mayapur as well. You say, Prabhuji.
Okay. So... Narada Muni, he was traveling one day and chanting the holy names of Narayan, and he came across one Brahmin, and this Brahmin he asked him, you know, he's very much into his rituals and Om Swaha, doing all the stuff. And anyway, he saw this person. He said, "Oh, who are you?" I said, "Oh, my name is Narada Muni." He said, "Oh, you're Narada Muni. I've heard something of you. Yes, yes, yes. So where are you going?" He said, "Oh, I'm on my way to see Lord Narayan." "Oh, you're going to see Lord Narayan. Oh, very good, very good. When you see Lord Narayan, can you do me a favor? And you please ask him when I'm going to be liberated? Is it going to be this life? You know, is it going to be next week or next month? Or what is the position?" So Narada Muni agreed. He said, "Yes, certainly, I will ask him for you." So on the way, Narada Muni came across this cobbler. He was busy making shoes, tapping away, "Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare." Just very blissful, very humble. And when he heard Narada Muni with the sound of his transcendental veena and chanting the holy name, he became very blissful. And he could understand that just by his hearing of the descriptions that this is Narada Muni. He asked him, "My dear sir, you are Narada Muni?" And Narada Muni, he confirmed it. He said, "Oh, my dear sir, it's so wonderful to meet you. Dandavats." And he was very happy to meet him. And he asked Narada Muni, "My dear Narada Muni, you're such a wonderful devotee. Please tell me, where are you going?" I said, "Oh, I'm on my way to see Lord Narayan." And the cobbler, he was so happy to hear this. He said, "Oh, this is so nice. You're so fortunate going to see Lord Narayan. I'm very happy to hear this. Please give him my respects." He was very humble and, you know, like this. So Narada Muni, he went off to Vaikuntha to see Lord Narayan, because Narada Muni, he can travel anywhere. On his stringed instruments, he vibrates the strings of his veena, and on the sound vibration, he travels through outer space to anywhere he wants to go. By the vibration of his veena and the chanting of the holy names, everywhere he's always chanting the holy names of the Lord. And when he saw Lord Narayan was very happy to see him, and Narada Muni spent nice time with him. And before he left, Narada Muni asked him, "Oh, by the way, I met a couple of people. I met one Brahmin, and he asked me to pop a question to you. He asked to know when he would be liberated." So Lord Narayan told him, he said, "Well, you can tell the Brahmin that he will be liberated only after hundreds of millions of births. And you can tell the cobbler also that he will be liberated in this very lifetime." And Narada Muni was completely shocked. He said, what is this? You've got a great Brahmin and it's going to be hundreds of millions of births before he's liberated? And you've got this humble cobbler simply making shoes and he's going to be liberated in this very lifetime? I don't understand. So Narada Muni, Lord Narayan told him, he said, "Well, I'll tell you what, Narada Muni. You do one thing and then you will understand. When they ask what I was doing, you tell them that I was threading an elephant through the eye of a needle. And then you will understand." So Narada Muni, he accepted the order of the Lord, and he went on his way. And then when he came across the Brahmin was very happy to see him. He was busy. He said, just a minute, I'm still doing my Om Swaha, Swaha, and so many things. He said, "Okay, all right, now what is it, Narada Muni? Nice you come. What did Lord Narayan say? Is it going to be today or next week that I'm going to be liberated?" And Narada Muni said, "Well, my dear sir, Lord Narayan told me that you're not going to be liberated for... You will be liberated, but it will be some hundreds of millions of births." And the Brahmin, he was so uptight. "What? You're nonsense. I don't even believe you're Narada Muni. I don't even believe you've seen Lord Narayan. Otherwise, how is it possible? I'm a Brahmin." So Narada Muni, he was a little bit taken aback by this somewhat proud and sharp behavior of the Brahmin. And he said, if you really went to see Lord Narayan, tell me, what was he doing? Let us see. He said, well, actually, he was threading an elephant through the eye of a needle. And the Brahmin, bah! You're nonsense! You're an imposter! Get out of here! He was very upset. So Narad Muni, he went on his way, chanting the holy names of the Lord. And when he came to the house of the cobbler, he was busy chanting, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And when he saw Narada Muni, immediately, dandavats, falling flat like a stick to offer obeisances to Narada Muni. And Narada Muni was... you know, very happy to see the cobbler. And the cobbler was saying, oh, my dear Narada, you are so fortunate. You've been to see Lord Narayan. You're so fortunate. Please tell me, what was Lord Narayan doing when you saw him? He must have been doing some wonderful pastime. Please tell me. So Narada Muni informed me. He said, actually, yes, he was... threading an elephant through the eye of a needle. And the cobbler, he immediately started dancing, Harimal, Harimal! He was really ecstatic and very happy. Narada Muni asked him, he said, don't you think that's a little odd and unrealistic? I mean, why do you believe what I say, that he was threading an elephant through the eye of a needle? And the cobbler replied, it is not difficult to understand, it's very straightforward. You see this small acorn. The Lord has put such a giant big oak tree inside this little acorn. What is the difficulty for him to thread an elephant through the eye of a needle? It is just a wonderful example of his incredible mystic power. He's so wonderful. I'm very happy to hear this. So Narada Muni, then he could understand what was the position. And then he informed the cobbler. He said, oh, one other thing. Lord Narayan informed me that you will be liberated in this very life. So this was very nice pastime exhibited to help us understand what is the quality. That if one is a Brahmin but he's not the Lord's devotee, then what is his qualification? What qualities has he developed within his heart and his life? But if one is a Vaishnava, even if he's coming from the lowest of low families, if he's actually a devotee of the Lord, then he's the topmost person and very dear to the Lord. Actually, he's already connected to the Lord by virtue of his pure Krishna consciousness. So these things we can understand are very helpful to appreciate these statements. That Lord Chaitanya, he considered that the six Goswamis were most elevated servants, and that Haridas Thakur, although coming from a Mohammedan family, is very, very elevated personality and the leading light of the Vaishnavas. Is that okay? Any question or comment? Okay. So let us read on a little more. Ashok Prabhu, could you lead us, read us a little more, please?
Lord Chaitanya's principle is universal. Anyone who knows the science of Krishna and is engaged in the service of the Lord is accepted as being in a higher position than a person born in the family of a Brahmana. That is the original principle accepted by all Vedic literatures, especially by Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. The principle of Lord Chaitanya's movement in educating and elevating everyone to the exalted post of a Goswami is so in the nectar of devotion.
That is what this book is about. It's about educating everyone to the exalted position of a Goswami, someone who is actually on the topmost platform of love of Krishna. And this is actually the universal principle. So just like Chanakya Pandit, he also explains in his teachings that even if someone is a fool, if someone is apparently a fool, if they give you good instruction, you take it. So, is it good? It's a universal, absolute principle for all human beings at all times. If you get good instruction, just because it's coming from a fool, if it's actually good instruction, then take it. It's like if you find some gold, maybe it's come from a filthy place, but gold, you just wash it off and then you find, yeah, it's perfectly good gold. What is the problem? So this principle is there. So the birth is not the considered point, but this is Lord Chaitanya's movement. And Prabhupada explains here, in educating and elevating everyone to the exalted post of a Goswami. That is what Nectar of Devotion is for, to teach everyone the science of Krishna. Because this principle is anyone who knows the science of Krishna and is engaged in the service of the Lord is accepted as being in a higher position than a person born in the family of a Brahmin. So next time someone says, yes, just see, I have got Janai, I am Brahmin, don't take it seriously, unless they're actually manifesting the qualities and the work of a Brahmin, then why should we accept? Because if their quality is that they're smoking bidis or doing all sorts of menial work and not teaching the science of Krishna, then what is the meaning of Brahmin? Just like if you say that, I'm born in the family of a high court judge, so that makes me a high court judge on your bike. Just because your dad's a high court judge, you haven't become qualified. You qualify yourself and you take up the role of a high court judge, then we'll accept you. Yes, you're a high court judge. Just like a doctor. If someone says, well, my dad's a doctor, so I'm a doctor. You know, I'm a big shot. You know, so what? Your dad's a doctor. What are you? You're a rascal. What is your qualification? You study, you've got a nice chance to study and become qualified as a doctor. And you practice as a doctor, then we shall say, yes, Dr. G. You know. But otherwise, what is the use? Are you simply calling yourself a doctor because you're born in a doctor's family? It's meaningless. But real meaning, you have the quality, the qualification, and the activity of a doctor. And then everyone knows, yeah, this person's a doctor. Otherwise, it's meaningless. Is that all right? Straightforward principle. This is what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. Guna karma vibhagashah. So this is the principle that Lord Krishna, the supreme authority, is giving in Bhagavad Gita. And this is accepted all the way through the Vedic conclusions. We see there are examples, just like Viduraji. He was born in a royal family, but actually he was the son of a Sudra woman. And his instructions are given for the benefit of all human beings in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Or Narada Muni. He's born the son of a maidservant. He's a 5-year-old boy. What does he know? But he associated with the Vaishnavas. He engaged in their service. He heard from them and he took the remnants of their prasad. And he became Narada Muni, the most exalted, respected Brahmins. Where Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, among sages, I am Narada. He's directly representing Krishna. He's giving everyone the science of Krishna. He's the spiritual master of just about everyone. So therefore, we can see that it is not by birth. So many examples. Prahlad Maharaj. Here we see him at the foot of Lord Nrsingadev. His father is born in the family of daityas. His father's a total demon, the world's greatest terrorist. But Prahlad is accepted as being such an exalted Vaishnava. His instructions are given throughout the Bhagavatam. And in Bhagavad Gita, again, Krishna says that I am also the devoted Prahlad. He's another representation of Krishna. Directly, Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam. So we go on the philosophy of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna's statement, and Srila Vyasadeva, the author of all the Vedic literatures, his last word in the conclusion of Vedic knowledge. Just like if you have milk, you churn the milk and you get the cream coming, you know, you get the the sharam sharam, the cream, comes to the top. Yes? You used to get the bottles of gold top milk?
Yeah.
You know, with the cream it comes to the top. So Bhagavatam is the sharam sharam, the cream of all the Vedic literature. It is the first class, Amalam Puranam. Srila Vyasadeva says it himself in Bhagavatam, that this is the spotless Purana. And now he also, his spiritual master is Narada Muni. So here we're seeing that what is the quality? What is the qualification? That the qualification is that one must be a Vaishnava. And if one is not a Vaishnava, then it is not a fortunate situation. One is simply, as Krishna explains, that the Vedas deal mostly with the three modes of material nature. Krishna says they deal mainly with the three modes of material nature: goodness, passion, and ignorance. But the Vaishnava, he is transcendentally situated. He is not in the modes of material nature, because he's actually, Krishna says, Mahatmanas tu mam parta daivim prakritim ashrita. That the great souls, who are yogis in devotion, they are under the protection not of Maya, but of daivim prakritim ashrita. They have taken shelter of my divine energy, the spiritual energy. They're under the protection of Krishna's superior energy. They're engaged in the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You know the verse? I saw you chanting mantra, so thinking which one you're chanting.
Same words.
What is that verse? Mahatmanas tu mam parta daivim prakriti mashvita. And the meaning?
Same.
Could you, one of you, get Bhagavad Gita from there, please? These are very important verses, because these works by Srila Rupa Goswami, they're meant to establish very solidly the principles of devotional service. So they're established, just like we are reading in the translation, in the song that we're singing, that the six Goswamis are very expert in scrutinizingly studying all the revealed scriptures with the aim of establishing eternal religious principles for the benefit of all human beings. What is the verse, Prabhuji?
Yeah, it said,
which chapter?
It's chapter 9, text 13.
Most confidential knowledge.
That's right, yeah. Also, no pratha, those who are not deluded, the great souls, are under the protection of the divine nature. They are fully engaged in divine service because they know me as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, original and unexhaustible.
Krishna's statement. Authoritative.
The next one very good as well, you know. Always chanting my glories, endeavoring with great determination, bowing down before me, these great souls perpetually worship me with devotion. The qualities.
Yes, Krishna calls them Mahatmas. Here is the quality of Mahatma. Not a rubber stamp, a vote by the people in general. Please just read that verse again slowly. What Krishna says is the quality, what is the meaning of Mahatma?
Always chanting my glories, endeavoring with great determination, bowing down before me, these great souls perpetually worship me with devotion.
Someone who is Krishna's devotee. Krishna says this is Mahatma. So, this is the principle. And so, nectar of devotion is meant for educating and elevating everyone to the platform of Mahatma. This is the principle. Any question or comment? Anybody want to suggest any alternative, common day interpretation of what is a Mahatma, of what is a Brahmin? Feel free. Does it go in the face of what is generally accepted, actually? And actually the answer is yes. The smarter Brahmins As far as Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Maharaj was concerned, they decided that he was a big threat. And that therefore the smarter Brahmins, they decided to kill Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati for his strong preaching the message of Krishna. Actually, even in those days, back in the 20s and 30s, in India, they were offering the police a 10,000 rupee bribe to not say anything when they killed Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Maharaj. But the policeman, the head of the police, he said to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, he said, you know, everyone knows we take bribes, but not for killing a sadhu, that we cannot permit. So please, they advised him, this plot is there to kill you, so please be very careful. Yeah. So that was, how much money was that? Even in those days, 10,000 rupees. That's how serious they were. That's how seriously and how dangerous they considered was Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's preaching, because they could see that he's threatening our position in society as the leaders and the rulers, the ones who call the shots. But Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, he wasn't having it. He said, no, these are Krishna's statements. Krishna is the authority. You are not the authority. Krishna is the authority. You have no right to pose yourselves as authorities unless you present the supreme authority. If you try and change and manipulate the teachings of the supreme authority for your benefit, then you're a crook. You're not actually a proper Brahmin. So the Brahmins are very... Actually, Brahmins, those who are engaged in the science of Brahman, their business is explained. What is that, 18th chapter? What is the duty of a Brahmin? Because we're reading in Bhagavad Gita also, what are the qualities of a Brahmin? And what are the qualities of a Kshatriya? What are the qualities of a Vaishya? And the duties? And the qualities and duties of a Shudra?
A Brahmana is peacefulness, self-control, austerity, purity, tolerance, honesty, knowledge, wisdom, and religiousness. These are the natural qualities by which the Brahmana work.
Krishna is defined.
Peacefulness, self-control, austerity, purity, tolerance, honesty, knowledge. Knowledge also, and wisdom.
Yeah. And honesty. But if you're presenting yourself as something very great, but you actually only have the qualities of a rascal, this is dishonest. So if we're honest, then we know, yes, I have the qualities of a rascal. But Krishna, he says this, so let me simply repeat what Krishna says and try to follow the orders of Krishna. This is honesty. Otherwise, what is the meaning? Trying to pass myself off as something else.
Sorry, which verse was this?
1842. And in those same verses there, you see the qualities of the Kshatriyas, the Vaishyas, and the Shudras. Could you just give us those while we're there, please, Prabhu?
Okay, then the next verse is 43 verse. It says about the Kshatriyas as well, you know. Heroism, power, determination, resourcefulness, courage in battle, generosity, and leaderships are the natural qualities of all the Kshatriyas.
So you see, we're reading in Bhagavad Gita about all these big, big personalities on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. These are their qualities. Courage in battle, resourcefulness, heroism, leadership, resourcefulness. All these...
Determination.
Yeah. You see their determination. Their determination is either you will be killed by me or I will be killed by you. But either way, we're fighting to the death. They're determined. They're leaders. They're heroes. People will like to sing of the activities of heroes. Is it not? Because they're very extraordinary people. So the Kshatriyas are naturally heroic. Not hiding behind a desk and saying, okay, you go out there and fight. Big, big hero. And then the Vaishyas?
Farming, cow protection, and business are the natural work for the Vaishyas. And for the Sudras, there is labor and service to others.
There you go. Krishna says, Chaturvarnya Maya Srishtam. I have created these. according to the guna and the karma, the qualities and the work. Here Krishna has defined what are the four orders of human life. It's very straightforward. We haven't made it up. These are Krishna's words in Bhagavad Gita. Our business is not to make up anything, neither to add something new or take anything away, but present it as it is. So then if we present ourselves as Brahmins, but actually we're rascals, then this is not as it is. This is as I would like it to be. But it's not as it is. Yes. So Prabhupada and the Acharyas, they present as it is. Therefore they're dangerous. Because the vested interests will not like it. So we're seeing, we were discussing about, in Bhagavad Gita, about the qualities and the policies. We're talking about politics, because after all, Bhagavad Gita, it's all about politics. The politics of power. Who's going to get the power? Yeah, and it's a battlefield, it's a big war of all these politicians, kings, rulers. So it's about politics. So what are Krishna's politics? Krishna gives one verse in Bhagavad Gita where he explains that he has three policies. What are Krishna's three policies? I know you know, but let's see if anyone else knows. What are Krishna's policies?
Policies for what?
Policies for life. What he wants to do. Politics, sometimes people say, is the art of getting what you want. Yes. So therefore, he explains why he comes. Paritranaya sadunam. Vinashaya chaduskritam dharma sangstapanataya. For this reason, sambhavami yuge yuge, I appear after age. Three policies. One policy, protect the devotees. Paritranaya shadunam. Second policy, kill the demons. Vinashaya chaduskritam. So therefore, battlefield of Kurukshetra. Rascals, kill them. And dharma sangstapanataya, re-establish the principles of religion. This is why Krishna comes. These are Krishna's policies. So Prabhupada explained one time, we're not interested in listening to the policies of a dying man. We're interested in understanding the policies of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is our business. This is Krishna consciousness. This is the Krishna consciousness movement. So that is what this is about, being really, actually really properly understanding and trying to be established very nicely in the science of devotional service to Lord Sri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of God. Okay, so let's move on. Maybe Mukesh Prabhu, you can read us the next paragraph, please.
Lord Chaitanya met the two brothers, Dabri,
Hasa,
and Shakara Malinka, in the village known as Ramakiri, in the district of Malda.
Malda, yeah.
After that meeting, the brothers decided to retire from government service and join Lord Chaitanya. Dipra Khasa, who was later to become Rupa Goswami, retired from his post and collected all the money he had accumulated during his service. It is described in Chaitanya Charitamrita that his accumulated savings in gold coins equaled millions of dollars and filled a large boat. He divided the money in a very exemplary manner, which should be followed by devotees in particular and by humanity in general. 50% of his accumulated wealth was distributed to Krishna consciousness persons, namely the Brahmanas and the Vaishnavas. 25% was distributed to relatives, and 25% was kept against emergency expenditures and personal difficulties. Later on, when Sakara Malika also proposed to retire, the Navab was very much
agitated
and put him into jail. But Sakara Marika, who was later to become Srila Sanatana Goswami, took advantage of his brother's personal money, which he had deposited with a village banker, and escaped from the position of
prison of Hussein Shah.
In this way, the brothers joined Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu.
So this was the situation. They'd become fabulously wealthy by serving the Nawab Hussein Shah. And Rupa Goswami, they both met Lord Chaitanya because they so much wanted. Actually, the six Goswami, the Rupa and Sanatan, they utilized their assets and their properties for having discourses and meetings to discuss Krishna Katha. They had fabulous places. Actually, if you go to Bangladesh, where Rupa and Sanatan had their residences, then what I have heard is their residences were enormous. Like they would have a personal bathing tank, you know, which was the size of a giant football pitch. That was their personal bath. They had such an opulent situation. But the fact is that there they would hold regular Vaishnava Katha ceremonies, and they would discuss and speak on so much of the Vaishnava principles in Srimad Bhagavatam. But they themselves were so humble that whenever a Vaishnava would come into the community, they would immediately get down and offer their respectful obeisances. They were such paka devotees of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. These are their qualities. Very dear to everyone, in fact. And their situation was that they had so much wealth, it's described, that Rupa Goswami's wealth was so great that it filled a large boat with gold coins. So much wealth, can you imagine? You get one gold coin, you think, wow, real gold, whoa. But this was huge wealth. Now the situation was that after they met Lord Chaitanya, because they were writing letters to Lord Chaitanya very regularly, but not getting any reply, actually. And finally they got a reply, and they managed to meet up with Lord Chaitanya and Ramakeli. And then the brothers decided that they would retire from their government service. Now is our opportunity. Let's get out of this and become engaged properly in the service of Lord Chaitanya. They weren't interested in becoming liberated, but they were interested in joining Lord Chaitanya. Their mood was actually to join Lord Chaitanya. So Rupa Goswami, he retired. He wanted to retire in the Nawab Hussein Shah, he agreed. Okay, alright, you've served me very nicely. But then Sanatan, he wanted to retire, but the Nawab said, no, I need you. You must stay. You can't go. So Sanatan was in very great difficulty. Sakara Malik, as he was known then, because they hadn't become Rupa and Sanatan at this point. So Sanatan Goswami, his heart was no longer in it. And he was taking time off and going and spending the day with the Brahmins and reading Srimad Bhagavatam, discussing Srimad Bhagavatam. Actually, this is what he was doing. And the situation was that he would send in sick notes. He would, what they call nowadays, pull the sickie. And he would say, no, I cannot come, I'm sick. And so the Nawab Hussein Shah, he became very concerned. And so he sent his royal physician to go and examine. And the royal physician, he came to the conclusion that I can't find anything wrong. So he reported to the Nawab Hussein Shah that I don't think there's anything wrong with him. He seems quite all right. He's spending his time reading the Bhagavatam. All right.
They put a tray on top, so I can't fold the tray.
All right, well, you carry on.
So just trying to save the flowers.
The point is, that he sent the message, the doctor sent the message to the king that actually he seems to be quite all right, but he's studying with these Brahmins and then reading Bhagavatam, so no real problem. So the king, the Nawab, became very, very angry. And he came personally and he asked Sanatan Goswami, interrupted his Bhagavatam, and said, "What are you doing? I hear that from my physician that you're not, there's no problem with you. So why are you not coming to work?" And Sanatan Goswami, he explained that actually, I can no longer support you in this activity of going and conquering so many people and causing pain and suffering to so many people around the world. I can't be engaged like this anymore. I'm sorry, but I have to leave that. And if that means you have to punish me, then so be it. And the Nawab became extremely agitated and angry. And he imprisoned Sakir Malik. He put him in prison. And he was so upset with him. And he went off to do his conquering. He was really upset because he so much depended on the service of W. Akas and Shakir Malik. W. Akas had gone, and all that's, now he got Shakir Malik, who's really needed him to maintain. He's such an important man for maintaining his government, actually. Without him, it was very, very difficult. So, understandably, he was pretty upset. Because that was his business in life, plundering and invading and ruling and everything. So anyway, it came to the prison time, and Shakir Malik, he talked to the jailer and his Mohammedan captor and said, "Well, actually, you know, I'm trying to be engaged in saintly life, so it will be good for you if you set me free so I can pursue this spiritual activity." And so the jailer said, "Yeah, but you know, if I get caught, I'm finished." So he said, "Yeah, but you know, I could organize that, you know, I could give you 5,000 gold coins and that would help you also. So it would be good if you do this, if you let me free." So, you know, the jailer, he was calculating, well, 5,000 gold coins, it's a lot of money, but still I'm really scared of the Nawab. So Rupa goes, Sakir Malik, he upgraded, he said, "All right, don't worry, I'll give you 10,000 gold coins. And what you do is you just tell the Nawab that one day when I was going out passing stool, I jumped into the river and I was washed away. And you couldn't find me, and I was just washed away in the river." So finally, that and the 10,000 gold coins convinced the jailer that maybe he could try and get away with it. So he let him go. And in this way, Shakir Malik, he traveled incognito in the guise of a beggar to come to join Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And that is another very wonderful story, how he met him. But the principle is that one can use anything and everything for the service of Krishna. You may say, well, why was a Brahmin and why is he giving him a bribe and black money? But actually he was utilizing everything in the service of Krishna because he had some important service to do for Lord Chaitanya. So better than rotting in a Muslim prison. I should get out there and do some service. So their service was writing, studying, scrutinizingly studying all the revealed scriptures with the aim of establishing eternal religious principles for the benefit of all human beings. And in this way, Rupa and Sanatan, they're honored all over the three worlds because they're absorbed in the mood of the gopis and are engaged in the transcendental loving service of Radha and Krishna. And that is what their books are about, establishing the eternal religious principles and educating us in the science of the service of Radha and Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So we can discuss more next time. But are there any questions or comments so far from what we've been reading? Yes, a short question.
Question. Yeah.
Only Sakara Malik was in prison. The Nawab Hussain Shah, he let Rupa Goswami go. He let him retire. He said, okay.
Sorry, when they were even serving the king, were they respected as Brahmins?
No, no, no. They were thrown out of the Brahmin community. They were ostracized.
Within the kingdom?
Yeah, people wouldn't recognize them as Brahmins. But the Vaishnavas, they accepted that actually they're very great Vaishnavas. They're absorbed in devotion. People would come from all over the world to actually hear and discuss Krishna Katha with them.
Because it was a Muslim kingdom, and they were like, obviously their lifestyle would be different when they were staying in the kingdom.
Staying in the kingdom, but in their private time, they were serious to understand the science of Krishna, and serious to serve Krishna, and be absorbed in Bhagavatam and Krishna Katha. And serious, after they met Lord Chaitanya, they wanted so much to meet Lord Chaitanya because they'd heard of Lord Chaitanya and they wanted to go and surrender to his feet, and they wrote so many letters to Lord Chaitanya. But the only reply they got was one letter where Lord Chaitanya pointed out that a very simple principle. He said that the wife, when she is involved in an affair with another man, she performs her activities even more diligently so that the husband will not suspect. What is the meaning of this? That they carried on their duties very, very nicely, but at the same time, their love was developing in their heart more and more and more for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And of course, the Nawab was very pleased with them. They're doing their duties so nicely. But actually in their hearts and their private activities, they're completely absorbed in developing love of Krishna. So the teachings of Rupa Goswami, as we'll see in the next few paragraphs, that Lord Chaitanya instructed Rupa Goswami for 10 days personally at the Dashashvamedha Ghat. Prayag. And the instructions that we're getting, this Nectar of Devotion and these other books by Rupa Goswami, these are the dissemination of these instructions that he was personally given by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So we're following in the line, we are known as Rupanuga Vaishnavas. We're followers of Rupa Goswami, actually. That is what this disciplic line is. We're Rupanugas, followers of Rupa Goswami. Rupa and Sanatan. Sri Rupa Sri Sanatan Bhatta Raghunath, Sri Jeev Gopala Bhatta Dasa Raghunath. These six Goswamis, they were instructed personally by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And it is because of them that this Krishna consciousness movement is existing. This whole principle and practice of Krishna consciousness is on the instructions of the six Goswamis who were instructed personally by Lord Chaitanya. How to elevate and educate the whole world to the platform of the Lord's devotees and knowing and practicing the science of Krishna. Is it okay? So therefore we're studying very carefully, painstakingly, this Nectar of Devotion to see if we can get the idea and become educated and elevated. Is that right? Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Nitai Gaur Premanandi Hari Gaur. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Imam Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pastaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Tinamani. Namaste Saraswati Deve Gaurabani Pacharani Nivisesha Sunyavadi Pastya Jade Shatari.
So those who follow